Welcome to the Stanley Street Social Podcast presented by MAP. Thanks again to MAP for all their support. And if you haven't already, make sure you check out their store in North Melbourne. My name is Alex Clements and I'm back here for the first time in 2019 at Social Club HQ with Campbell Flakemore.
Hello, Alex.
Welcome, Campbell.
Thank you.
Good to see you back alive.
Yes, I was in my grave last week, hence why we didn't put anything out, but we're back. And yeah, there's a little bit to get through.
So to start off with, what have you got for us in terms of the news of the last, how far are you going back? Last week? Last two weeks?
Yeah, probably just the last week. I don't think we want to get too caught up in what's happened over the last 2 weeks, but...
Have you been locking into the full coverage?
I haven't. It's been on too late. Mm. It's been starting coverage-wise at about 12:30. It's probably just a little bit too late this early in the season to be putting yourself in your grave. You've got to keep your powder dry for later in the classics. But I guess the Wolfpack is probably what needs to be spoken about. They've won three races this week. Umloop, Kern, Brussels, Kern. They also won La Cime with Florian Senechow last night. So they've won three races in a week, which is just, it's just ridiculous. Like, Kerner is traditionally a sprinter's race. Mm-hmm. Bob Youngles took the chockies. He was incredible. I'm not sure if you saw it, Alex, but he held off the peloton in a breakaway for 30-odd K. Just, they were maybe under a minute, and then he went solo the last 10K and held them off. And Stibar, he won it at Umloop solo, attacked with 2K to go and took the chockies. But they're just always winning shit, and I don't know how they do it.
Watching the highlights, it was kind of like, it was symmetrical. Those two, Umloop on Saturday and Kern Brussels Kern on Sunday, it was like just breakaway, majority of riders, whack, whack, whack. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Traditionally, it's like I said before, it's a bit of the sprinters kind of classic, but Quickstep had other ideas, and I think Maxi Gorn's got a little bit to answer for again. He was pulling up Youngles in our podcast he did a couple of weeks ago, and he's just gone out and won again, as well as winning in Colombia. So he's had a pretty good start to the year. Has B Youngles.
He has, and it is good that, like, it is kind of exciting to start watching those first highlights of the spring classics.
Mm.
They're just such good races and so much to offer. And this, that, like, I've only been watching the highlights packages and skipping through the recording, but this is good.
It's proper racing,
yeah.
GVA, he was good as always. Ran a second. He was probably just a little bit too. I don't know. He's always a little bit.
He's pretty
jumpy,
eager, wasn't he?
He's always jumpy in the finals, and it pays off sometimes. Probably doesn't pay off as much as he would like, but one thing you know with Van Avermaet is you're going to get a solid performance every time he shows up. So it's good signs of him heading deeper into spring. And I think he's racing this weekend at Strade Bianchi, which we'll get onto later in the piece.
Probably one of my favourite races of the spring.
I think so.
Anything else?
I don't think so. Besides the last same, whatever it's pronounced, that was on last night.
A good finale too. It's worth checking out.
I haven't seen it. I haven't had a chance.
Nicky Terpstra was on a mission.
Was he?
Yeah. And again, though, the Kern and Quickstep had the majority of riders in the breakaway. And Florian won from a small bunch kick.
Just another guy on a team that is winning races.
Yeah, first victory.
Really?
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting too, seeing, well, something that's going to touch on later is Nicky Terpstra and how he's gone after he's outside the Wolfpack for the first time.
Never really been a big Terpstra fan. I think we went through this
last year after his performance in the classics after
was,
he won.
I don't know what race it was, but what did he do? He got up the organisers or something.
Yeah, and he was
carrying on like a pork chop,
flicking off media people and race organisers that were trying to help him. And yeah, we kind of went a bit off him at that point, but
still off him.
Yeah, still off him. Our take: we're going to go into a couple of points in a little bit more depth, just talk about the Oz TP time, a team's pursuit time at the World Championships and their World Championships. what happened in the Umloop women's race, and I guess probably the thing, unfortunately, that's covered the news the most this week is the blood doping, and it's still a thing. But first of all, TP time. Both the men's and women's teams pursuit one, but the men's clipped their record yet again. Like, how far can they go? Well,
that's the thing. It's going to get to a point where they physically won't be able to go any faster, but in the last 20 years, the time has come down dramatically.
Like, I remember when GB did that 350 at the Olympics in Rio, and everyone was like, oh my God, never to be beaten again. They're already 2 seconds up on that.
Mm. It's becoming an event where it's no longer really endurance, is it? It's more power athletes.
Sam Welsford is like kind of the man.
Yeah.
He's kind of the big, strong, just muscle gear. And they're riding these enormous gears.
Exactly. The athlete type is changing. It's becoming more like power, more kind of punchy compared to what it used to be. It used to be Dennis Durbridge, Bob Bridge, these sort of guys.
Yeah, Wiggins and Geraint Thomas.
Wiggins, like, Geraint Thomas. But now the sort of body composition is changing. We've got S. Welsford. You know, all the other guys in the team, they just look a lot bigger than they ever have before. And the game's changing, and I don't know whether they're going to have to change the distance to make it a 5K pursuit to kind of attract endurance athletes, because 3 minutes 50 is going to be, what, 3:45 maybe come Olympics next year to win. That's not a whole lot of time to be racing, so they might have to look at changing the distance to try and lure in some more endurance athletes, because at the moment it's going down the power kind of angle.
I guess the question is whether the Australians can hang on to this till Tokyo. Traditionally very good at the World Champs.
Traditionally, yes. Traditionally GB, they go missing.
Yeah.
But they pop up once every 4 years, and that's really all that we care about, isn't
it? Which I think was evident looking at kind of the mainstream media's coverage of the race. Column in The Age,
yeah,
little mention,
right,
in the Herald Sun, like,
yeah,
AFL X is on and it's 4 pages deep, where these guys have been like just an unbelievable time. No one cares.
I think you're right. I think it's all about the Olympics, and it always has been on the track.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the funding comes from. If you don't perform there, then your funding gets cut in half. But
yeah,
like, I don't know, I'd love to see him do well at the Olympics, but you just know that GV, they're just gonna just simmer, and then come Tokyo, they're gonna be the ones to beat, you feel.
Mm. But I guess Simon Jones will be feeling pretty happy with his master plan at the moment.
Sure, Timmy Decker's got some things in place as well.
Yeah, so, and the other thing, just full credit, like, those blokes that do track for 4 years. Like, that's it. I don't know if I could have done that.
They get to do bits and pieces. As it comes closer to the pyramid, it becomes
just track.
I imagine for the next 12 months, there won't be a whole lot of road. But, yeah, they got guys like Lee Howard's come back for another sniff. I think Cam Meyer, he's probably around the group, but he's going to be more the bunch races. But one guy who would actually like to get on here is Kel O'Brien. He is a big rider. He is a rider.
And he animates a bike race, which we are both noted and we're both big fans of, when we went to that 6 day in Melbourne. Mm. It was like, it's like the strongest bloke in the world.
He
it's
is.
Unreal. And Sam Welsford too. Those two together, it's pretty off chops.
Yeah. And a bit of depth as well with Cam Scott, who was the one that missed out in the final. So
and Alex Porter as well. Like, it's, geez. You are in for a bit of a hard run if you're trying to get your foot in the door in the men's team's pursuit squad at the moment.
And we've got that young group coming through, the emerging podium potential group. Maybe one might sneak in for the Olympics next year, but we'll have to wait and see.
Just get a bit of a joyride to the village.
Mm. Get the tracksuit.
Yeah, get the tracksuit. Free Maccas.
Which we love.
Point number two. In the women's lump on the weekend, a rider attacked and got a big enough gap on the bunch to catch the men's race. The men's race wasn't doing a whole lot at the time. And, yeah.
Yeah, massive cock up. Of course, from probably from the organisers, they probably weren't expecting the two things to come together like that. A, the women's to be going out like a shot out of a gun, and the men's race to be creeping along, and it's made the mainstream media. And as always in cycling, it's always making mainstream media for the wrong reasons. And this, in this 2019 that we're living in, this wild age where everyone's offended by everything, and especially when it comes to gender, Alex. It's the hot topic. People love to get involved and have their two cents here and there. And, you know, from the untrained eye, in terms of people that don't know cycling well, this doesn't look good, does it?
No, it looks doesn't a bit look B-grade. Good at all,
but
the opening race of the year, in terms of for the Spring Classics,
I just don't know why the organisers even let this possibility happen. Like, you know what I mean?
So, I mean, thinking about it, it's really good that they have the females race on the same day, just bigger crowds, whatnot. I guess they've also got some kind of TV schedule to run by as well. Like, there's a lot of factors that are unknown, and I think, and traditionally the men's race is out of the blocks, which it wasn't. And the females race was out of the blocks, and I guess put two and two together and this is what you get.
Yeah.
So there's a few unknowns that like schedules that they probably, and they've also got to shut the roads. Like it might just be the way it is, but yeah,
I think they'll learn from this. I don't think they'll really give themselves the opportunity to be caught out like this again. I think it's maybe a wake up call, I guess, for some other organisers just to not let this happen.
And then, like the next part of what do you do? Well, what can you do? Like, you have to stop the women's race. You can't just let that breakaway rider go into the ambos and then into the team cars. Yeah. Like, what else are they meant to do?
Yeah, it's just not a good look.
Point number three, I guess the biggest news story of the week was two blood doping cases within a week, which came out of Austrian.
Can you please update me with this?
Did you read anything this week? Were you on Twitter?
Yeah, I was on Twitter. I clicked on that link, but it was all in German. I don't speak German. Didn't translate on my phone either. can you fill me in?
So, I better get the writers' names up. Anyway, so I guess it all started to unravel when there was that tweet where the cops are there and the guy is mid re-injecting. The Austrian skier, which most people saw on Twitter.
He was just like, oh,
just,
shit.
Just like, it was...
You know what, boys? He caught me up, but just let me finish this off. Like,
like, nowhere to go. You can't just rip the needle out and burst out of there. So that happened at the start of the week, and then that kind of opened up a bit of a ring, and within that, two guys have been done. Priedler from FDJ, who came out and kind of said that, I just couldn't live with the fact that I'd taken blood out. This is what is his words, that he'd taken blood out but didn't put it back in.
Of course he didn't.
And
so with intent to blood dope is essentially what...
Yes, with intent to blood dope, but he was saying that he didn't actually blood dope.
Yeah, look, I was just taking it out, Justin.
No, I think he's not saying that he didn't intend to put it back in, but he's taken it out and this is what happens. He hasn't actually put it back in yet.
Didn't plan to either.
And then there was a second case of Stefan Denifel, who... rode for Aqua Blue last year, signed a contract with CCC, which got terminated at Christmas time.
Yeah, he was like all last, end of last season, like, yeah, I need a job, this, that and the other, someone help me out, gets a lifeline from CCC, and then...
And then see you later.
So what happened with him? Who...
He's confessed to blood doping in a police interview, according to the Austrian media.
What is wrong with these guys?
Well,
pissing me off. Like,
yeah, I know.
Especially someone like that who's begging for a contract at the end of last season, gets the lifeline, and then
a good lifeline too, not some shabby Slovakian team.
It's a good organization, and then when his contract gets terminated, you start thinking, what's going on here? Like, alarm bells start ringing. And yeah, now we know why, but this guy, man.
I guess the Predler, because he Denifel hasn't made any comments, but kind of Predler's come out in the media a bit more and said, like, because obviously we've got those comments of he had supposedly hadn't blood dope yet. He just was, his blood was in the bags of everyone else's, and he's kind of the way he's projected the reasoning behind it is that it's just purely performance. It was like, I've got to a point where my career's lulled. I was struggling to perform. I guess for these guys that are, he's mid-age, he's good, but he's not super. Like, he's got to a point where his career's plateaued, and it's like, what else do they do?
Yeah, it's not like these guys are Uzbeks or Russians where it's like, probably back to the coal mines.
I know, yeah.
It's probably just to Vienna to work in an office job.
I know.
It's not that dire. Mm. I wouldn't have thought to
risk your life and
risk the reputation of the sport.
Yeah, it's not that dire, but I guess these guys belt themselves, and it must be hard for them to get to a point where you go, oh, fuck, I'm not getting any better here. Like, what do I do? And some shady German doctor comes up to you that's got this quick fix solution. Yes, it is obviously the stupidest thing he's ever done, because he's ruined his career like that, and he's ruined the reputation of him and everyone around it. But it's interesting. For me, it was interesting that it's still a thing.
Mm. Well, these stories, they keep popping up.
They keep popping up, yeah.
Once or twice every 2 years, someone will just pop up and brings everyone, we're talking about it again, aren't we? Now we're talking about it. Is there blood doping still in the sport? Well, yes.
Yeah,
yes, there is. this is what we know about. So who knows what's going to happen in the next few weeks coming off the back of this, but not good.
And it's just so disappointing for all the other athletes, because they just get thrown under that same blanket again of they're cyclists, they're... The mainstream media portrays it as, because this made it as well, dodgy.
Just looking at this Stefan Denifel bloke on his PCS, and this photo, you just want to grab him by the neck and just throttle him up against the wall, don't you? No, you do.
Oh,
because when you're out there, I just remember him all end of last season just crying out for a team, gets a lifeline, and now goes and does this, just like... I wish you were going back to the coal mines doing 80 hours, getting paid €4 an hour.
It's the same deal with this Predler bloke story. It's like, I don't know, you just don't know how much you can trust. But coming out and kind of making claims that he never did it, like, what's that going to do?
Yeah, you're done.
You're done.
You're busted.
You are busted. There's no real positives out of this. The only thing to take is that, like, I guess it's a message for other writers, like, this is still real, but they're getting caught, which I guess is good. Coming up, moving on to a slightly better topic, Strade Bianchi's on the weekend.
It is.
Absolute doozy of a race.
Mm. It's only been World Tour, I think, for the last maybe 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, only probably a couple of years.
Probably deserve that status. It always lures in the best classics boys in the business, and our boy Rob Power had a good one here last year.
And he's back on the start list.
He's back on the start list. Let's hope it's as filthy as it was last year, and he might be able to run a drum. But
he's back on the start list, and he's back on the start list not getting biddens for Derbo. He's back on the start list potentially with an opportunity to go from the get go.
Did you say it was your favourite classic of the year? Did you say that before?
I don't think you can really upstage the hype and the build-up and the actual race itself of Flanders and Roubaix. Apart from that, though, yes, it is.
Just looking at some of the names on the list already, Alaphilippe, Valverde, Wout van Aert, Jakob Fuglsang, Vincenzo, Gianni Moscon. It was in the big names, and I reckon I'm going to go with... I'm just going to go with Van Aert, Wout van Aert. He's world tour. He's going to have probably a good team around him, have some actual genuine support instead of having to go 60K in a breakaway. Might be able to save his legs for the finale, but I think I like Wood van Aert.
Did you mention Alaphilippe?
I did, yeah. He was mentioned. I guess with their red hot start, he's probably got to be in the mix.
I think with that pretty strong team that they're, and the way that they've been racing, and the way that they progress, and the way that they just carry victories through, I think Alaphilippe's going to win. With the hope that Bertos just throws it down again.
They're Roach, Anderson,
Roach,
Sam Ooman.
Roach to keep Rob's head cool.
Yeah. Can't believe that guy's still going around, still getting gigs.
Paris-Nice and
Torino's
coming up, but there's not a whole lot out yet.
There's some like semi...
half teams.
Yeah, there's nothing really confirmed on the start list. AG2R is confirmed. For Paris-Nice, Caleb doing Paris-Nice in prep for San Remo in a couple weekends' time. But yeah, it seems like all the big boys are going back to Torino, the guys that are kind of doing the general there. Alaphilippe, Benoot, Van Avermaet, Adam Yates, Peter Sagan, Pinot, Michael Woods. So that seems to be the race that the big boys are opting
card.
For. So
no Richie Port, apparently sick.
He's crook again. This guy's having a bit of a rough start. Besides TDU, where he always gets work done, he seems to be a little bit under the weather, which probably isn't a bad thing.
Maybe
plenty of time to get ready for July.
Maybe Cobby might be a blessing in disguise.
Hopefully.
Question time. Unless you got any more.
No, I don't think so.
Question time. Hearty 99. Did Terpstra make the right move to Direct Energy?
Answer that at the end of April.
Yeah, but based off the weekend,
probably yes. He's the big man. He's the big dog in the yard. He probably was the big dog in the yard at Quick Steps.
He was a big dog, but there was a lot of dogs.
There was a lot of other big dogs.
Yeah, but as you said, I think after the real big dances are on, we'll be able to tell.
I'm sure he's getting an absolute bucket load.
Yeah, I'm
well.
Sure his finances aren't struggling.
If you were to ask him now, I think he'd probably say, yes, I'm happy with the move. I'm the big dog. I'm the leader all the time, and I can do my own thing. So probably to answer the question, yes.
From Hayden Smith, ways to lower the barrier to entry to cycling. It's an expensive sport, and I'd love to see more people start. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is an expensive sport. Yes, there are barriers to entry.
John or Scott become real philanthropic and start donating things, I guess as the governing body grows, that would be a way, but they're not growing at a rapid pace and they haven't exactly got the best financial state, so... I just think that's how it is at the moment.
Sadly. I mean, it sounds like a bit of an ordinary answer. That's how it is. But I think if you want to do a sport with minimal barriers, go get some runners and start running.
Yeah, one pair of Kayanos for the year. Adam Phelan, should Edmo bring back the mullet? Yes.
Yes, of course. It's pretty obvious. Should. The mullet-moustache combo. Hopefully he's got it. Oh, what's he got? He's got a month or so before the big classic, so there's time to grow it a little bit.
It's a good girlfriend now, though.
That's probably a good thing.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's probably a good thing.
Okay.
You're not out trying to graft. You don't have to...
Yeah, but she might be pulling him into line. Taco van der Hoorn's bar brake lever setup. It was front and center, Kern, Brussels, Kern from P_H4LL. I don't really understand what that means. Is that like where you have your brakes on your...
Nah, he's super narrow. Have you seen that guy? Super narrow, like kind of tilting in. It literally looks like he's got his hands next to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, I mean, it hasn't been pulled up, but it probably should be.
It'd be rubbish for going down hills.
Yeah, luckily Belgium is not a whole lot of hills.
Yeah.
You can kind of thread the needle through gaps, but it doesn't look like something that's awfully stable. So...
I'm sure
it looks filthy.
Surely there's a rule. You see, I have rules on everything.
They do, yeah. So I'm guessing it's past whatever rule they have in place.
From Michael Freeberg, what's it like to be a moto photographer when it's cold and raining during the classics? got an international answer from that, from Twila.
I'd love to answer this question, but unfortunately I've never been on a motorbike. Well, actually I did once, and it was at Piccolo Giro di Lombardia U23, and luckily for me it was sunny. However, I can say that shooting from a motorbike is really different from shooting in place, because you have to be careful, because you are in the peloton, you are so close to the riders, and at first I was really scared that they could fall. And that's when I understood the importance of choosing your own motorcyclist, because you have to connect with him, you have to know his rhythms and vice versa, because if you're not, anything could happen in the race. So I hope to get more often on a motorbike, even when it's windy and cold, so I can come back to you and talk to you about my experience. Thank you.
Another one for Twila, our photographer. Is there a team or rider that you find particularly good to photograph, from the minion _of_doom?
So, it depends. Depends on what the client asks or wants, because maybe he wants a specific rider or a team, or maybe he just wants a mix of race photos. But I often take pictures of those I know, because I already know their faces, their expression, or how they move. However, I look for specific scene scenarios to be shoot, regardless of the rider.
Hayden.ng, how can the cycling business model be changed so that the racing scene becomes more profitable and less reliant on sponsors?
This is your area. You could do a whole podcast
on that, but purely there's no TV rights or profit from the ASO push back into
that
the
has
sport.
To be the start, doesn't it?
It's the only way to start that I can see.
Yeah,
I think that's the one-worded answer.
Then we also talked about maybe a couple of weeks ago, kind of like an NBA league pass. You buy.
Yeah, well, we're talking about how like hard it is to consume.
Yeah,
but again, the UCI, no one owns all of it. Like it's,
I know,
you have to get buy-in from everyone. It'd be like the new Narcos, where he goes around and gets all the.
Yeah, just started watching that actually.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
And the last one via Twitter, what's your opinion, or is Australia heading down the right direction with their one cycling development, which is, for those that don't know, they're bringing all the governing bodies together into one to reduce the costs, make it more efficient.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Makes sense.
On paper,
it would be a very hard thing to do, but someone's got to do it. And I think it's the right decision. They're going about it.
So what they're doing is they're bringing BMX in, Mountain Bike Australia in, all into the one.
Oh, and like one hub,
and the states.
And the states, Tasmania, Victoria doesn't have their own accountants and general managers. Like there's definitely people running it still, but it's all under the one roof, which makes sense. So yes, to answer the question. Thanks for listening to the Stanley Street Social Podcast. We will see you back at the Social Club next time.